Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Loose Units, the podcast. Just a tiny bit of housekeeping. I wanted to thank all of you who got behind Ruler Mark, the podcast about people's obsession with Paris, hosted by Tegan Higginbotham, that went live on Monday. And it's on iTunes right now, and I asked you all to jump on board and subscribe, and you did, and I just wanted to say thank you, because it's been a roaring success, and it's absolutely lovely. Episode 2 for Ruler Mark goes up around the same time as this one, maybe a day later. Anyway, also, Dad and I will be back in the studio very shortly, but as he's still overseas, it's time for another episode where I call him in Thailand and he talks us through some fairly traumatic stuff. Enjoy.
When I was a little kid, my dad was a cop. You see, my dad was a cop in the 80s in Sydney, which is generally regarded as the Wild West of law enforcement. A terrifying time to be a cop or a criminal or just to be in Sydney full stop. And I, one day, stumbled upon his case files and they absolutely ruined me. So years later, I approached Dad and we went through his old case files together and it became a book, Loose Units. It's in stores right now, actually. And now we're doing a podcast about it. Loose Units, the podcast, is a weekly true crime podcast where I sit across from my dad, an ex-cop from the 80s, and we dive deep into the seedy underbelly of Sydney's policing. So we're doing this podcast down here in Collingwood every week at Castaway Studios together, and we hope you enjoy it.
Hey, listen, I have a bit of a strange story for you that might be a good point to kick off this episode. So Tegan and I thought we would take a little bit of a mini break and go to the Yarra Valley, which is, like an hour and a half outside Melbourne, maybe. And it's where a lot of the best wineries are, and it's green and it's gorgeous and it's really great. And we couldn't find any proper accommodation, any Airbnbs or anything that late, because we did kind of book quite late. So we saw this thing for glamping, which is basically like rich people's version of camping. It's big, kind of fancy, desert style tents with Persian rugs and, beds and a fridge, and it's fully powered. And so we signed up for it and we paid for this glamping thing. We get there and it's basically a campsite, like a caravan park, and they've just kind of sequestered off this corner of the park near the forest and called it glamping. And it was basically just like big tents on a car park. And we're like, whatever, it's all good. And we stayed there and, it's a caravan park, so there's lots of kids running around. And we're like, whatever, we're not precious. The area is beautiful and we've stayed in kind of fairly dumpy places before. And it was clean and it was fine. And last night we were about to go to sleep and we heard effectively one of the tents near us. There was a big wedding in an adjacent valley and everyone had streamed back and there was this family having a full-on domestic just outside, and it was spilling onto the front of our the little walkway onto our tent, and the guy was threatening to bash his wife, and it was 30 minutes of a proper, like, really horrifying, very loud, aggressive domestic, and we didn't feel safe. And reception was closed, and so we waited until they were in their tent screaming and threatening to bash each other, and we get in the car and we head off. We drop the keys off. We call the after hours emergency number, and the woman's like, "Oh, that's a shame. Oh, I'll go and have a word." And I got this kind of weird vibe. So we call this morning. Tegan calls, and Tegan basically says, "We didn't feel safe. There were lots of children staying in the park, and we didn't feel it was appropriate. We felt, like we were in danger. The woman was threatened with violence, and it was really upsetting." And the woman on the phone working at this park, the Big Four. I feel comfortable naming them, the big four, Caravan Park in Yarra Valley. This woman was like, well, yeah, it's a real shame. But, you know, we had a few people come up afterwards and say it was just, you know, a bit of a family blue, you know. And Tegan was trying to point out, no, this was like domestic violence. And we felt physically threatened, and we felt so threatened that we had to leave. And, you know, and the woman's like, oh, yeah, well, you know, we can offer you a free night here, you know, to make it up for you if you like. And we didn't know how to respond in the moment. We didn't know how to, we didn't know whether to call the cops. We were so close, and just, there was like, you know, like a piece of fabric separating us from these, several men who were really, it was very scary. And we didn't know what the protocol was. We were worried we hadn't handled it properly. We were toying with calling the police, but if we did that, they would hear us. And they were so trashed, we thought they would go us, and we didn't feel safe. So I basically wanted to ask you, as somebody who has been called to these kinds of situations, is there a good way to handle this? And how do you handle these kind of situations, especially when it's someone else's family stuff going on that you're not technically part of?
I would definitely call the police straight up.
Okay.
And explain to them what's happening and let them talk to you and elicit information from you. And what I would do in that particular situation is I would even consider having the phone, sort of take away the phone away from your mouth,
yeah,
and hold it in the direction of the party and let the police hear what's going on, which is a really, really good idea, because then they get a sense of you know, just how bad it can be. And you've also got to remember, in these situations, historically, weddings have been the scenes of a horrendous altercations.
Really?
And have in the past and up until now, and no doubt well into the future, there have been people murdered at these functions.
Jesus Christ, really?
Yeah, true. It's a fact. I mean, I recall one just a few months ago. It occasionally makes the news, and sometimes, well, obviously, there are people filming, and I've seen brawls at weddings. I mean, if you, after we do this podcast, you might like to just Google, just type in weddings brawls, weddings fights, you know, and it'll blow your mind. Because like funerals and weddings, these, and Christmas time, there are certain events in people's lives where people repress a lot of feelings.
Yeah.
And you don't know what triggered that particular event. It could be, I mean, remember that movie, The Wedding Singer? You know, where at the beginning the guy is completely trashed, the singer, and then the guy comes out. Remember that scene where Steve Buscemi comes out, and you know, and people say terrible things at weddings. They think they're being funny. They're talking about the groom, and they're telling the bride's to be's parents that, you know, he basically, you know, shags everything on two legs, that sort of stuff, and the family are going, hang on a sec, do we really want to hear that? And the guy thinks, oh, well, look, I'm being really, really funny, but he's pissed.
Yeah.
Completely all his, you know, barriers, all his in normal day-to-day life, those things that we, you know, maintain as being civil and normal, all those things fall away. And unfortunately, if they fall away at a funeral or a wedding, and you know also that we may or may not have discussed, but, you know, I have extensive experience in the funeral industry.
Yes.
And boy, oh boy, some of the things I've witnessed. I mean, it's incredible. So, look, I would have called the police if you felt that bad. Perhaps you could have, I don't think they would have. There's always this paranoia when you call the police about a noisy party or an event that, oh my God, are those people that are actually the cause of this, are they going to come back and like have a go at me? But the reality is that they don't know who calls the police. The police never, ever divulge that information. And I think you have okay, here's a scenario. Imagine if you and Tegan you didn't do anything in that particular case, you left, but how would you feel?
Mm-hmm.
News this morning, you found out that someone had been murdered that night.
Yeah, that's a, yeah.
Yeah. You'd go, oh, shit, maybe I should have done something.
Yep.
The police don't mind. They prefer to know about these things prior to the event than getting a call afterwards saying someone's been stabbed.
Right. I guess my problem was the next morning we assumed that there'd be this deluge of complaints and people, but it seemed like everyone was kind of sort of fobbing it off as some sort of, oh, it's no big deal. It's like, and does that, like, what is with the normalization of that sort of behavior?
It's completely normal because your mother and I, we lived in a certain suburb of Sydney on the beaches.
Yeah.
And we had not one but two sets of living scum neighbours. It was so bad our house used to vibrate. And you'd go into a delirious state where you would dream up demonic methods of, you know, ritual killings for the... No, I'm serious. Look, people that are deprived of sleep, you become insane.
Yeah.
Let's face it, Mum, we've touched on this before, that it's a form of torture.
Yeah.
In actual CIA and, you know, they deprive people of sleep. Now, if it's 3 a.m. and your house is vibrating and there's a bunch of lunatics 2, 3, 4 doors up, or if you're in a valley or on Sydney Harbour, it can be coming from another suburb across the water, and you feel like a complete tool calling the police and saying, look, there's a party, 10 kilometres away, but I can hear it. But then in the morning, once you go through that delirium traumatic process and you fall asleep and you drift off into la-la land, when you wake up in the morning and it's nice and quiet and there are birds outside and you're feeling slightly refreshed, you don't feel that same anger and angst and you kind of go, well, I'll move on. And then that's how it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, noise complaints are the bane of police officers' lives. But in that case last night or the night before, it appears to me that it was a domestic. It's upset you and Tegan to the point where you were contemplating calling the police.
Yeah.
And my advice in that particular situation is that, I mean, you felt so upset that you actually left that night. Now, that's a big call. Mm. And, you know, it's also in people's nature not – people don't like to get involved. And everyone wakes up the next morning and, oh, you know, whatever – and that's kind of, it's a funny thing, isn't it?
Because I don't know, just that whole, that wing of, like, the crime mansion makes me so sick and angry. Have you ever, can you recall any times you as a cop were called to weddings? Or wedding-related stuff?
College.
Or funerals, as you said.
No, not offhand, but... Look, I was actually going to touch on a particular topic today that I haven't discussed with you.
Oh, okay.
So I was going to talk to you about what police officers and I guess other emergency service people do, you know, flight attendants, doctors, nurses, paramedics, firemen, police officers, what happens when they're off duty and and they experience a particular incident. And a few weeks ago, Christine and I, we were up in King's Cross, which used to be a very, you know, notorious suburb. And the analogy I like to give today is that back in the 70s, there were bikie gangs with Harley Davidsons parked in the main strip where all the strip clubs were. And then a few weeks ago, I was up in King's Cross, which is only a few minutes from where I live, and I looked across to where all the big Harley Davidsons and all the Comancheros and the Bandidos and the Hells Angels and the Finks, all the big gangs used to be, and they were just Vespa motorcycles.
Not quite as threatening. They're not so much brewing up meth in trailers as they are brewing up coffee in, you know, bespoke coffee houses.
And that's the sort of the passage of time. But we were having lunch, and there were these two guys, and they were off their faces, and it was really, really upsetting. And hundreds of people that were in this cafe strip are more than aware you can cut the air with a knife, but no one is prepared to do anything. And there were a group of police at the other end of this popular sort of eating, I guess you'd call it sort of a thoroughfare, but they were kind of just sort of observing, and I'm watching these two guys, and they went to a particular sweet lady's shop, and she's just opened the shop.
Yeah.
And one of them completely destroyed, broke, trashed this beautiful display out the front of a shop. And there were, as I said, there were hundreds of people in about five or six restaurants watching this unfold. I'm trying to have my lunch and just trying to sort of, you know, just have a nice Sunday, and I'm watching these two scumbags, and they were literally out of control, and they were big guys, and they were scary. And this is my point. Even though I've been out of the police force for probably 30 years, there's a part of, and I'm quite sure that with all emergency service people and also soldiers, that if you witness an event, it triggers a particular reaction that you don't necessarily have any real control. It's like this automatic sort of mental thing happens where you kind of slip back into that mode. And it's like once you've been in the police force, I'm quite sure that till the day you die, when you witness certain incidents, your body goes into this automatic, you almost sort of go back in time. And I stood up and I knew that everyone was really, really upset, but no one would do anything.
Yeah.
And I sprinted past the two guys.
Oh, Jesus.
And I ran up to the police, and the police were probably at least 100 meters away. Mm. I started literally screaming at the police, saying, look, you know what? This is what's happening down here. This is what they've done. And I said, and they were kind of looking at me going, well, you know, and I said, look, I said, I'm an ex-police officer. And I said, these guys, this is what they've done. And it's completely unacceptable and something needs to be done. Now, it was weird because as soon as I mentioned the ex-police thing, you kind of, you know, they kind of start to take a little bit more notice of you, which is a shame in a way, because they really should be taking notice of everyone that says things about, you know, if things are bothering people, they should go, okay, yeah, well, you know, but because I mentioned the police thing. And then I came back to our table and the police came down and it was a pretty heavy situation, and I was sort of waiting for one of the police to actually, you know, be flattened by these two guys.
Yeah.
And they arrested the guys and took them off. And then while Christine and I are sitting down having lunch, a couple of the people nearby that had been at other restaurants came up and thanked me. Complete strangers, saying, look, we really, really, really appreciate what you did. But I thought, you know, there's this society feeling that, you know, no one wants to get involved and people let things slide, but there comes a time. So, you know, that's a situation where I've been out of the police force for a long, long time, but a particular story that comes to mind, I was in the police force, but I was off duty because I had quite a few situations over the years, and I'm quite sure that quite a few police in their careers experience things whilst they're off duty.
Right.
And the thing is that you're really never ever off duty. The thing in the police force is that, at least in New South Wales, and this was instilled into us at the academy, was that once you announce your office, in other words, you say to someone, I am a police officer, you're on duty. So it'd obviously be something fairly serious. So I'll never forget the night I was going to work at Manly, and it was the 11 p.m. shift.
Mm-hmm.
I was driving, funnily enough, the same shitty white Holden that is mentioned in, I think it's at the end of Loose Units.
Yes, I know the car. Yeah.
Yeah, you know the car. So I'm driving that same car, which was a late 60s Holden, and, you know, it looked like a bit of a shitbox. And it must have been winter because I was, again, wearing my blue jumper. So I'm just sort of cruising into Manly, and I had to do a U-turn. So I went to do this U-turn, and this car load of people, they kind of braked suddenly and obviously had the shits.
Mm.
But, you know, I was obeying the road rules, and as far as I was concerned, everything was sweet. But to them, they've seen me perhaps, you know, break a little bit soon, or maybe they just weren't paying attention and they kind of had to sort of swerve slightly to avoid a collision.
Mm.
I've turned around, started heading in the opposite direction, And I then looked in my rear vision mirror and I could see this car, and they also did a U-turn, and that made me feel slightly anxious. And then they started actually gaining on me, and I'm probably doing 50 or 60 kilometers an hour. Mm. And they overtook me and cut me off, and they stopped their car in the middle of the road.
Jesus.
And I'm parked, and these two guys get out of his car and start coming toward me, and I'm thinking, well, you know, this isn't going to end too well.
Yeah.
And it was late at night. There's no one around. And what I did, because to them I'm just some young guy in a shit car,
yeah.
And I'm fair game. And I had I had my full uniform underneath my jumper. So as I kind of get out of the shitbox Holden in one amazingly smooth sort of super jumper, and from behind the door, it was the most amazing thing to see these two shit bag, you know, just assholes. They're kind of running toward me. And as I come from behind the door, this slow realization manages to sort of, how do I say it, kind of began to materialize that I was, in fact, a fully armed police officer.
Sure.
And my gun that I used, because I'm left-handed, so my gun was on my left hip.
Yeah.
And I sort of moved right out into full view. I remember seeing them like in a movie, that everything's moving at normal speed, mm. and then all of a sudden they began to slow down until they just stopped, and they absorbed and registered the entire situation was that they were about to assault an armed police officer. And I just stood there, and they stopped, turned, ran, hopped back in their car,
yeah.
and fucked off. Stood there in the middle of the road. This is Pittwater Road, Manly, which is, you know, back in the day. Look, it's a really busy road now, but back then it was probably a Sunday night.
Yeah.
And I just had the biggest smile on my face, and I hopped back in my car and headed off to work. And that was just an example of that I was prepared to, you know, take things further. It could have turned into a really nasty situation, and you know, the uniform saved me, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then there was a time when I was, again, when you're off duty. I mean, there's that amazing story in Loose Units about the SCP that I...
Oh, shit, in the department store, yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's an amazing story you know, I'm off duty. I've been off duty for maybe 4 weeks. See the SCP, and for those that have read the book, will appreciate the gravity of that incredible story.
Yeah.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story.
In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, but you know, I was in a Chinese restaurant once getting takeaway, and there was a customer, and he was off his face on some drugs, and he was incredibly violent, and he was, you know, literally throwing furniture around.
Yeah.
And every single person in that restaurant, you know, there were families with young kids, and it was so traumatic for everyone involved. There were probably 50 people in the restaurant. It was a Saturday night. It was in DY, which is on the northern beaches of Sydney. And, you know, it was mid-80s, so I've sort of, you know, I'm in my mid-20s, you know, dressed like a bag of shit, probably been at the beach all day, chilling, coming to get my takeaway order, sat there, witnessed this psychopath going completely off the Richter. And funnily enough, that restaurant, which is still there today, is only 100 metres from DY Police Station.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, it's the moment. It's that point in time where you don't even think. You just go into, and you forget that you're not in uniform. You forget you don't have a backup. You forget you don't have a radio. But you, in essence, you put yourself on duty. And I said to the owners of this restaurant, I said, look, because you always carry your ID. So I flashed my badge and said, look, you know, I'm a police officer and this is, you know, would you like me to deal with this? And they said, look, we'd really appreciate it. So I went up to this guy, bearing in mind that there are probably 50 people watching. Yeah. So I need to be a little bit kind of, you know, discreet. So what I did, I got my thumb and forefinger and I put it behind his neck, near sort of one side, by the side of his neck.
Yeah.
And I squeezed gently. And I, it's a weird thing, but when you do that to someone, if you get the right spot, you make them feel a little bit kind of woozy.
Shit, is that a Vulcan nerve pinch?
but it works wonders if you do it properly.
Yeah.
And but to the public, they're looking at you thinking, wow, he's just amazing. He's pretty well taken control of this person, but it looks as though the guy's just walking politely with him.
Mm.
And I escorted the guy out onto the footpath. You know, we exchanged a few words. And I told him to leave, and he left, and there were no dramas. And then I went back inside and got my takeaway. So there are ways. And when we were at the academy, I'll never ever forget that. And this is going to sound a little bit kind of, you know, not weird, but it's a fact of policing, in that we were taught from a very sort of early time within the police academy. I don't know what it's like today, but back in the early 80s, you know, we were taught that if you went to a demonstration and you needed to sort of escort people, they taught us techniques to escort people away from, you know, certain situations, but to make it look very effortless and very painless, so to speak.
Yeah.
If I can say that, because you know that when you watch the news coverage and you see police officers completely losing the plot in demonstrations and riots, which are pretty scary, obviously, and it looks really, really bad. But we were actually taught techniques to come up to people very discreetly and just sort of slide your sort of hand between their arm and their body and just, you know, hold onto their wrist and give it a bit of a twist so that it looks very, very, you know, orderly,
yeah,
and harmless, but you're actually causing a little bit of pain to the person. And the more they kind of object, you just very discreetly apply a little bit more pressure. But the thing is, no one knows in terms of the cameras filming you.
Right.
They don't really – it looks very, very peaceful and gentle.
But, I mean, like, have you ever dealt with any protesters? Have you ever dealt with any major protests?
Yeah, I went to a really, really full-on demonstration in the city.
Yeah.
And I think this is probably the first time I've ever discussed this, but the police sort of stand in a line and you're face-to-face with the demonstrators.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of tension. And the weird thing, Paul, is that I'll never, ever forget this particular – it was my first and last demonstration, thank God, that I've ever, ever been to.
Yeah.
I was standing opposite this person, this girl actually, and – I kind of, everyone's really like, where the line, you know, is that the thin blue line, us and, you know, the police sort of are in the middle. We're trying to sort of, in a way, protect the protester from the people that are against the protester.
Sure, because, I mean, especially recently, there have been a lot of, you know, white supremacists marching around Australia, and there's been a lot of people out there trying to protest against the white supremacists, and I guess, you know, you're just trying to stop some sort of, you know, conflagration going on, I guess.
I'll never ever forget, I don't actually, this is going to sound a bit weird, but I don't actually remember the subject matter of the particular demonstration. However, I distinctly remember moving forward slightly towards this particular girl and saying, almost in a whisper, I said to her, you know, I actually agree with what you're protesting about.
Right.
Because, you know, at the end of the day, we're all humans. The police have got their job to do, and it's a tough job. Mm. In this particular case, I remember saying that, it struck me as being fairly important to sort of let her know that, you know, the police are not just this line of mindless jerks that are, you know, because we're not. I say we, thinking that, you know, sort of present tense, but
yeah.
And I thought that was quite important for me to say. So she, and it was peaceful. There were no dramas.
Okay. Because I mean, back when John Howard committed all our forces to the Iraq, basically the entire country, every major city in Australia had tens of thousands of protesters protesting peacefully, and I was at university at this point, and I went out and, you know, marched for a few days, and it was very peaceful, and it was just, there was a very positive energy of like, they're going to see this and they're not going to do it, and then he said that, you know, I'm going to do it anyway. And there was never any real urge to, you know, like, throw anything through windows. But I guess if you're a cop and you're on a horse and you're tear gassing and clubbing somebody, you know, I guess the optics are shocking, but also that seems a disproportionate response. I guess what I'm trying to say is I find it very comforting to hear that you expressed your agreement with her cause. Like, I think that really does help humanize.
Yeah,
police.
I think, look, you know, you've got your civil disobedience and riot squads and all those guys that get around in the big black four-wheel drives and wear the masks and everything, and you need those guys as well.
Yeah,
you need them. The first time that I came to Melbourne, when you told us that you were moving to Melbourne to reinvent yourself, and I was, you know, before you'd even finished the sentence, I had the ute packed with all your stuff, and I. You know, I drove down with all your gear on the back of the ute. And I drove into Melbourne for the first time in my life, and I actually got lost. And I remember that it was the G10 or the G12, and it was really, really violent in Melbourne. And I'll never forget seeing the mounted, like, horses, which we see in Sydney all the time, getting around. They even get around where we live here in Rushcutters Bay at night time, and it's beautiful to see the police horses, because it's a real sort of it's a great PR thing, you know, it's a positive thing. But in Melbourne, I'll never forget, I got lost, ended up in the CBD in this sort of a demilitarized zone, and all the Melbourne police horses were kitted out with full body armor on the horses, and it was scary to see these amazing horses kitted out in full armor plating.
Right.
And I realized that, wow, this is serious. And that was the year that a lot of the big police riot squad vans, I think they had the water cannons, and a lot of them were tipped over and they were smashed, and it was heavy.
Yeah.
And you know, that's another side of policing that and you know, you see the footage of these police, the riot squad, and you know, they're all look, at the end of the day, they put their gear away, they put it in a locker, and they catch public transport, or they drive a car or a motorbike, and they go back home to their lives, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not for everyone, I mean, I could have joined the tactical response group, which started when I was in the police force, and some of my good friends joined the TRG. And but it just, you know, I it's not my cup of tea.
Yeah.
I don't know how these guys and perhaps girls too, I'm not quite sure whether women do it, but all over the world you've got these riot squads, and it's like it's using very basic, probably Roman, gladiatorial techniques of sort of get together, huddle, move forward. You know how they get their shield, their batons, and they bang their shields. That's a psychological thing.
Right.
It's to make the protesters feel, oh shit, this is really, really bad, and if we don't get out of here, it's going to end, you know, pretty badly.
Yeah.
But you know, you need, there are people that actually do that, and yeah, it's and how they don't lose their temper.
I assume that, you know, that does happen.
It does. Yeah. Because that's that human side of things.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I only have one more question before we wrap up this bonus episode of Loose Units, the podcast, Dad. In the story where you escorted the raving lunatic out of the Chinese restaurant, when you came back in to collect your food, did they give you any free prawn crackers or any discounts or anything?
They obviously said to me, no charge. Obviously, but hey, it was. It might have been $15.
I think that qualifies as police corruption, and I hope any people in internal affairs who are listening are putting that on your record.
Paul, I didn't say whether I paid or I didn't pay.
You didn't pay.
I can't remember.
You didn't pay.
But anyway,
crafty so and so.
Yeah, so look, it's all about the point of this whole, you know, what I was saying is that even today, you know, if I see something that happens, you know, I guess like training, when I did skydiving for 5 years and I had 3 malfunctions, the first malfunction I had where I had to cut away from my main canopy, you don't think about it. You don't go, and process all this stuff. No. You've got a malfunction. You're falling. You're plummeting. You're about to die. You cut away from your main. You deploy your reserve, and it saves your life.
Right, so you just act. Now, I guess what I'm saying is I kind of wish you'd been there just to see what it's like to see someone who's got the relevant training, how they would react in that kind of situation at the campsite.
Yeah, but look, you know, again, everyone's human. I told you that story about my friend that cut his lip. I told you that story?
Yes, and listeners will remember that I almost fainted.
The thing is that, look, no one knows how they're going to react. And look, you know that I went on to join the New South Wales Fire Brigade, and I did that for 10 years.
Yeah.
And, I've never ever really discussed any of those incredible stories, but, you know, I have witnessed firefighters in very, very stressful situations basically become utterly useless. And it happens in all professions with extreme stress, I imagine.
Yeah.
There's no warning, and something triggers off this reaction inside you where you just completely shut down. And I've seen professional colleagues in various situations for no apparent reason, just some trigger. It could be personal. It could be, you know, I don't know what can cause it, but I've seen really, really amazing professional people just lose it and basically have to be taken aside, and because they are no longer capable of helping, they become a hindrance. And what happens is, of course, when something happens to a colleague in that situation, you have to divert manpower to those people to assist them as well, and then you're sort of losing strength with your core group that are going into a situation. And it's all, you know, but people, you know, when you least expect it, things in life can trigger all sorts of things. And, you know, like some of the things that I did in forensics, which we've never discussed because that's for another day, another book. But yeah. Those forensic stories, when I look back at those, and they are, you know, if you think that the stories in Loose Units, the first book, they don't rate. with the forensics. The forensics is like, it's like the twilight zone on speed.
I truly cannot wait to tell those stories. And I also, when you mentioned the fire brigade stuff there, I kind of want to delve into those at some point as well. But listen, I think, listeners, if you have a thirst for those stories, please let us know on the Loose Units Facebook page, facebook.com/looseunits. And please, regardless of whether you're driving or on public transport or lying on a beach somewhere listening to this podcast, please take one headphone out, scream into it, and thank Dad for all his amazing stories. We'll be back with our regularly scheduled programming and our regular episodes very shortly, but we hope you've enjoyed these bonus episodes. Dad, thank you so much for hooking us up again.
All an absolute pleasure.
Aww.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.